This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to Style File, where we cover everything and anything on the business of fashion. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and for this week's Style Maker, we have legendary Malaysian fashion designer Edmund Sir.
My opinion for my personal self is that I got to be true to myself. What am I good at? What should I do? I think that's important.
After that, Emma Chung Johnston of Elle Malaysia discusses what is chic about dressing up like your granny.
If you end up looking too kind of covered up, long sleeves, like puffy sleeves, voluminous kind of things, and like long hemlines, you can look a bit, you know, like a librarian.
But first up, our style maker for this week, Edmund Sir. Starting out as a menswear designer in 1986, Edmund Sir later moved on to design women's fashion for practical reasons. In 1992, he opened a boutique specializing in women's workwear and has since established a reputation for fashion-forward, dapper styles. He's also expanded to Japan, Indonesia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Singapore, and has become a favorite local label for newscasters in Malaysia, which certainly boosted the brand name. The Edmund Sir brand is now a developed corporate servicing company catering uniforms to corporate giants.
Now, tell us, you know, the story of how you made your label is definitely amazing. You faced financial difficulties when you were starting up, and it's almost like a from rags to riches kind of story, and, you know, with a lot of hard work and persistence. Tell us, how do you manage the challenges that arise?
The thing is that I started back in 1980. After graduating in England, I was there in 75 until 80. I got back to Malaysia. Started off with a tailoring shop called West Point Fashion House. I mean, we have a lot of young kids. You know, during those days, you don't really get fashion things, actually. Basically, it's a lot to, they get ideas and then we just try to visualize it for them. And then from there, I had a girl, a very nice girl, and she says that, hey, you only make men's things and men's shirts and everything. Why don't you do some ladies' things for me? Then I say to them, okay. Then she says that what you just have to do is make it longer for me, the shirt, and then become a dress. And she says that after doing it for her, I just found that there's a big spectrum of for women. And then from there, the first thing we did actually is like we sell to department store. We sell to Parkson actually back then. In 80-something.
And so you moved to Isetan and all?
Later on, only to Isetan. Actually, along the way, actually, we went to Singapore in 87.
Ah.
Yeah. The thing is that we were in Singapore since 87. The thing is that the Metro Group, and then they had this so-called the ASEAN designers, actually. So after doing the show, with the, they called the best of the ASEAN designers, and I'm lucky to be there. The thing is that then we were taken on by the Metro Group. Because there's no point of designing and making clothes and doing a catwalk and you can't sell them, it's no point. It is a very good platform for us in Singapore.
But what was the fashion scene like in Malaysia when you first started West Point Fashion House?
I would say that there's not much fashion. It's basically, it's a lot to do with people come over to visit you and then you make clothes for them, you design for them, because that's what I learned in England. And in fact, I did menswear.
Purely menswear.
Purely menswear, a little bit of ladies. The thing is that because our college covers in terms of there's men's, ladies, and then there's theatrical clothing, you see. So my main forte actually is men's. And then I'm a good technician. Technician means in terms of I'm able to do construction, you see.
Oh, wow.
So basically, I do not just design. You look at my designs, it's very simple. If you know the technical side, so you're able to construct and put things together. And then my designs basically is for simple girls, so that they can wear for a long time, and then also it's value for money.
Back then, you know, during the West Point Fashion House, when you mentioned, you know, there's no fashion back then, how has it changed now?
Oh, now it has changed tremendously. Now you look at around, you either can go on the net, you can search for fashions and bloggings, and you can get things. And then you, example, you there's so many international bridge lines in Malaysia. I think the arena is totally have changed tremendously. Consumers have so much choices in comparatively back in the 1980s. The main influence actually is music. Music are the one that influences
fashion.
The fashion. And in Malaysia, I would say that. So sometimes they come over and say that, you know, I would like to do something like that, is it? So we try our level best to replicate for them. So basically, fashion is in this form during those days. And of course, we do have fashion shows. So you take part in fashion shows, and then during those days, it's very popular to have like the lunch show for women, actually. Hotels like this Holiday Inn in KL, they do have a platform for designers to do it. And then during those days, I was lucky in a way that I was working quite closely with a modeling agency called Act One. Mm-hmm. And they really like gave us opportunities, you see, to showcase our clothes, you see.
But that's great. And you see, you've apprenticed at the local men's tailor during the 70s. And then you studied at numerous institutes and also studied tailoring from a master cutter who fashioned clothes for Queen Elizabeth II.
Yes.
That's wonderful. I mean, tell us what you've learned since then, and then how do you incorporate them into your work, your current work today?
I would say basically, like in Malaysia, what I did in the early 70s is just I learned basic technical side in terms of my tailors. I mean, I appreciate, I thank him tremendously. The thing is that after that, I left for England in 75. I was in Medway College of Design. That's where we learn actually in more on the industrial side. Then I left Medway and I went to Canterbury College of Art, whereby I was lucky to study under a great tailors actually. He makes things for the Queen, you see. Mm. He works for Huntsman. Mm. Huntsman is in several. They do make a lot of clothes for the current Queen. It's very popular. It's very, very famous, you see. Mr. Holland, the name of the person I learned with, oh, he's very strict. Very, very strict.
How
I mean,
strict?
So strict that a lot of things is not right. He'll just ask me to unpick it and do it again. And then he will probably sometimes to ask us to like iron all the students' clothes for them. He's teaching me a lot of things. I didn't realize it, actually. Ironing is very important. Mm-hmm. How to press. They don't call ironing, they call pressing, is it? You're able to stretch certain part. You're able to make things nicer. How to make a clothes nice, is it? Clothing can be just three-dimensional, but the thing is dead, is it? So by pressing and ironing and all these things, it really is able to mold the shape up and everything. Mm-hmm. So I really like to thank him, actually. Sometimes we see like young designers, you look at them as an audience. All the designers are very talented. But the thing is that they do not have the technical to back them up. It's very unfortunate because the advancement of Malaysia has made it difficult in terms of to have a lot of seamstresses and tailors around. Is it? Because basically, imagine that you are a tailor or a seamstress person. Would you want your daughter or your son to take on this job? You will say that, oh, my daughter, I want him to be an engineer, a lawyer, a doctor, or accountant and everything. You see? So that's what is happening now, is that we get a lot of those foreign workers coming in to work in Malaysia.
And you've spent most of your time outside Malaysia, but what made you want to come back?
I came back to Malaysia in 80. Mm. I just say that a lot of Malaysians actually do want to wear nice things also.
Yeah.
Not only just foreigners. And I think in a way that I feel and I sincerely hope I'm doing a good job for Malaysians, actually, dressing them well. Because back in the 80s, you don't really have a lot of nice things for Malaysians. It is my aspiration to make Malaysian people look nicer. Mm. I thank all the Malaysians, you know, that has made Edmund Sir what he is today. You know, I mean, I still recognize. Like, I'm honored to be here today.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
You've also been a judge for Miss Malaysia Pageant, a Malaysian Young Designers Competition, and as well as Project Runway Malaysia. Now, in your opinion, tell us, which direction do you see Malaysia's fashion scene heading to?
You're looking at the scenario, it's very murky. I look at it. Why am I saying this? It's because that there's so much choices. Any international brands, I would say that we know, are also in Malaysia. So the thing is that Malaysian designers, we have a lot of setbacks, actually. We don't have good tailors, machinists. I would just say they make ourselves more aware for the Malaysian consumers to appreciate the Malaysian designers, you see. For the foreign brands, they have all this pool of people, you see, from technicians to fabrications.
Yeah.
They have everything. They have my opinion for my personal self is that I got to be true to myself. What am I good at? What should I do? I think that's important because there's no point of diversifying. It's important to do your best. And hopefully, the consumers would appreciate what you are and will buy, this is Edmund Sir, or this is so-so Malaysian designers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that a designer should do what they want to do.
Do you think we're lack of talents?
I think talent-wise, I would say, how do we benchmark talent? You know what I mean? It's very subjective, actually. Most of Malaysian designers, they are talented. But the thing is that, do they have the depth? That's important.
Depth and knowledge and all.
Yeah, but the thing is that you cannot fault them because in its time, hopefully Malaysian consumers will come to a point that says that not to be loyal to Malaysian products, you don't have to actually, you know. But the most important thing is that identify yourself. This is what I want to wear.
What made you want to go into fashion designing?
Basically, it's like this. I think I have a slight inclination on liking to wear clothes. You know what I mean? Look at my age now. Okay.
not that
back
old.
In the early 60s, we watch TV programs. Not many TV programs those days, is it?
Yeah.
So you want to like imitate and whatever they are wearing, is it?
Yeah.
So the thing is that I like to do this. So I tell my mother. Of course, my mother will tell her, you know, what are you doing? You know, you should be doing other things and everything.
Mm.
Then I said, no. I said, this is something very good to do. I told her the reason why. Because I noticed my father and my sisters, they're all like employees. You know what I mean? And I said to myself that, what is the most least financial for me to open a little tailor shop? And I said to myself is that, it's either I go into culinary arts, hotel lines, or I go into this fashion thing, is it? I realized I saw my father working when he's still 70s, he's still working. So I say to myself, you know, I'm not going to be like you. I just don't want to see my father, especially he's working until so late. He's working so hard. And then his returns is also not that great, actually, I look at it. Actually, the thing that inspired me to really want to do into business is because of him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's prompted me to do this, is it?
Now, what about your self-named brand, Edmondson? Now, mostly you specialize in jackets and then career wear as well. Now, in your own words, you know, how would you describe it?
I think my clothing lines, I mean, especially my corporate wear, my suits and everything, that's what I learned in England. That's what I'm good for, actually. That's what I learned from my master's is in England. So the thing is that I found myself, like I say to you, as a designer, you need to know what you're good at, what's your strength and everything. Somehow or other, I felt that my strength lies in my suits and everything. So I'm able to construct it well. I'm able to handle it. I'm able to know what's the end result of the suits and everything. So that's the reason why, Edmondson, you see that until today, this brand has been around and then it's still doing the same similar things, is it? That's what my main forte is all about, actually.
And you also have created Spade and Sir fashion labels.
Spade, basically, what I've done is that, like I say, as a designer and a businessman, I just felt that maybe there's a bridge line. You know, Edmondson is Edmondson because Edmondson has got his own consumers group already. We have a big pool of consumers, is it? And I think it's also good to branch off. During those days, Zara and all those brands are not in Malaysia yet, is it?
Correct. So there, but not in Malaysia
they're
yet.
They're not in
right?
Malaysia. Mm. I think basically that's the reason why I started the brand Spade. It's because it's supposed to be young, stylish.
And what about Sir?
Sir actually is supposed to be like my Edmondson consumers has they have been buying my things, and then within that structure group, there is another group of consumers that says that I want to be a bit different from this Edmondson label.
Right.
That's the reason why I come up with this Sir label, a little bit more nicer quality fabrication, nicer things, you know. But somehow or other, it's still the same like Edmondson.
But when you design all these jackets, you know, and all, they're mainly all the same. It's just different designs a little bit. I mean, where do you spark your inspirations and all?
I think basically, in terms of there are certain ladies, actually, is in my mind when I design it. Like ladies like Michelle Pfeiffer. I find her very simple, stylish, demure, very understated. So the thing is that for the Chinese lady, I think it's Lin Jinxia. She has that aura of beauty.
Good. And what are you currently working on now?
Actually, if you look at Edmondson now, we are more into corporate business, actually.
Ah, tell us more about it.
Yeah, the thing is that now, basically, what happened is that we find a very niche market in terms of like designing for like hotels, banks, corporate clientele. The reason why, because all these hotels and corporate clientele before this, fortunately and unfortunately, in a way that they are not able to realize what the end user wants, is it?
Right, okay.
So the thing is that with my background knowledge in terms of I've done designing for so many years in the retail market, so when I talk to them or they engage me, I'm able to transform their things more realistic, is it?
Okay.
Design for them, I do designing from design to manufacturing, everything is done within my own factory. Reason why, because I believe in a way that my retail site opens a lot of doors for me. Like I say, that if you're true to yourself, people will recognize you. So the thing is that, like I said, maybe I'm luck or maybe it's what I've learned in England technically that I pursue my retail line And now I'm going to the corporate side, you see. So it just moves on fairly well.
Well, let's talk about the future. What do you see Edmondson maybe 5 years' time down the road? What do you have in plan?
Currently, we are doing corporate side. That's where we're able to have the bread and butter. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. Eventually, if the scenario is correct, the environment is correct for us, I think that we will probably be having a simple Edmonds boutique bag. And then we hopefully I'm able to do things that I want to do. And hopefully that my consumers, they are able to like what I do. I believe in a way that if Malaysians are able to give me the support and everything, I think we are able to do that also eventually.
Now, lastly, you know, as someone very experienced in the fashion industry, locally as well as internationally, now tell us, what words of wisdom would you pass on to aspiring fashion designers?
Like I said earlier, that be true to yourself. Work hard. It's going to be difficult. Definitely it's going to be very difficult. Be patient. Time will come for you. All of you will do well. Don't try to do things that you're not good at. For me, the most important thing is to leave a very nice legacy for the Malaysians. And then think within the box, not out of the box. Means it's what you're able, what you're capable at, and make it nicer.
After the break, Emma Chong Johnston, managing editor of Elle Malaysia, discusses what's chic about granny-esque. But before that, here's What Kind of Man by Florence and the Machine, played at Gucci Spring-Summer 2016 in London. It's Lee Chui Lin on Stylefile. Next up, Emma Chong Johnston of Elle Malaysia discusses what's chic about playing dress-up as your granny.
Granny-esque has received quite a lot of significant attention. Tell us more about it.
So, granny chic is a bit of a departure from recent trends from the last few years. I mean, we've seen that kind of Celine, modern, sleek look become really popular, and granny chic is like completely the opposite of that. It's like lots of layers, lots of frills, lots of florals, ribbons, that kind of stuff. And the one person that is responsible for this is Alessandro Michele at Gucci. So over the last two seasons, he's brought back this kind of really geek chic, grandma kind of aesthetic, lots of florals, very vintage inspired. And yeah, and everyone is now catching on to it.
About in terms of layering and in terms of like frills and flowers, it doesn't really suit each and every one.
No, it's one of those things that looks amazing on you if you're a model. And then if you're anyone else, you have to tread quite carefully, I think.
How would you pair it? How would you wear it?
I think probably the easiest way to do this trend is via the blouse, which we've talked about before, I think, in previous months. So it's a very ladylike look, and the blouse kind of encapsulates that. So, you know, something white or ivory with like maybe like a high neck or frills or lace or like little cuff details.
Gives it a classic look and all.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, so you get that kind of grandma aesthetic without, you know, going the whole hog.
But what about brooches and all? I mean, brooches, do we go for the bigger one or the smaller ones?
Yeah, accessories are also a very good way of tapping into it. But yeah, brooches, basically, if you can think of anything that your grandma or some, or like anyone in that generation, you know what I mean? That kind of like the cameos, or like the jeweled flowers, things like that. So you can pin them like at your collar or on your cuffs, or even like pin them on a ribbon and wear them in your hair. Mm. Also things like just like, you know, ribbons. Ribbons are a very kind of granny chic thing. So like tie them around your hair or tie them around your neck.
Like what you mentioned earlier, you know, granny chic mainly suitable for models and not everyone else. Now, what's the worst that can go wrong?
I think the main problem with this is that you end up looking too kind of covered up, like if long sleeves, like puffy sleeves, voluminous kind of things, and like long hemlines, you can look a bit like, you know, like a librarian. I mean, obviously, if you like that look, there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, it's not for everyone, and it can be a bit unflattering because there's just kind of too much going on. There's too much fabric or there's too much volume. Like most things, you know, it's about balance. So, you know, balance, if you're wearing like something more voluminous on top, try like pairing it with something skinnier or something more tailored on the bottom, things like that.
You know, something that would you invest in?
The thing with this whole granny chic look is that it's about how you put things together. So it's not necessarily something that you can go out and just buy like one thing that will. So I think it's fine to just work with what you already have. Maybe pick up a blouse or like a brooch or something like that. But just play around with things you already have, I think.
For someone who would like to invest in granny chic style, I mean, what would you advise?
I think the blouse, like a really, like a nice quality blouse, because that's something also that you can wear with lots of different things, and it's a big trend on its own as well, and it's kind of classic, a bit timeless. Or even things like, you know, shoes, so like Mary Jane pumps. I know kitten heels aren't to everyone's taste, but they are kind of having a small moment, so covered shoes, pumps, that kind of thing.
And that was this week's episode of Style File. If you missed any part of the show, catch up with the podcast on bfm.my, and don't forget to like our Facebook page, Style File on BFM 89.9. Before we go, we leave you with Lion Babe, Treat Me Like Fire. It's Snake Hips remix played at Chanel Spring Summer 2016, New York. This has been Style File. I'm Lee Chui Lin on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.